And it was Ellen that was really the genesis of this, because she wanted to put these four people together and see what would happen.
The title of the exhibition is Thinking in Public, and it started out really as being an exhibition that could reveal the way of those of us who work in this realm think. The original vision was that it was going to bring together our individual projects in some way. None of us were very interested, really, though, in a documentary show. And we started talking, and I don't remember who it was who suggested, well, we're doing it in the Smith Tower. Why don't we do the Smith Tower? And we all immediately agreed that we should create this show to reveal the process of thinking by demonstrating it rather than by talking about it. So the idea of using the Smith Tower as sort of this microcosm which could demonstrate the way we think and the way we create public work is exactly the way we're going about the Smith Tower show. So we've been talking to all kinds of people. We've been doing research. We come together. We bring all the research that we've done so far. A different piece of a different part of it will stimulate or be of interest to one or the other of us, and then we'll go off individually and research that.
And we're trying to have a balance so that it's not Jack's piece, my piece, Ellen's piece, but that kind of thing. Perhaps there's not going to be any signature in there. It's just a collaboration, which is what a lot of our public art is. You know, the signature is in the genius of the idea, not in the name.
I think the idea was mine to do it on the Smith Tower. I thought it would show how we worked better if people could see it in a context that they were standing in. The Smith Tower itself, it was built as a promotional piece from the beginning, and the people who have bought it, each of them has used it to promote an image of Seattle and of themselves. So it seemed like the perfect symbol to take on in terms of public artists who, as Buster calls it, like to mess with social engineering. It seemed like if we're going to talk about social engineering in Seattle, a perfect symbol would be the Smith Tower. So it seemed like a lovely coincidence.
I credit Buster. He said that every place has a story to tell. It's what's the story. I think now it's moved to you got to find the voice, which is, I think, where we're headed a little bit with Smith Tower, is what's the voice of the place and what are the voices. So we're talking about going over and recording the elevator doors that are the last elevator doors in Seattle that are manually operated, that they pull them across. Find, see if there are other sounds in the building. Pull up the old sounds of the building. So we went over there. We went over to the building. We said, well, let's go take a look. We started getting interested in the building and looking around and things and hearing the elevators go by and started wondering, well, what's going on? And then we asked, why was this building built here? Why was it the tallest building west of the Mississippi for so long? Who was Smith? And started peeling that onion.
So then we all started just looking at the history of the place, and all of us kind of took it however we work as individuals and presented collectively what the material was that we've gleaned. And from that, I think we've got some pretty interesting issues.
There's a wishing chair on the top floor that came from China in the Chinese room, and the story goes, if a woman sits in the wishing chair and wishes to be married, she will be within a year. And Smith's daughter sat in the chair and wished and was married a year later in the Chinese room.
Well, one of the interesting stories is King Broadcasting, where apparently Dorothy Bullitt noted that there was no way they could deal with the exterior noise and soundproof, so they decided they would throw open their windows and use the sounds of the ferry and the street noise and everything else as a feature of their radio station.
And I think that's what we all do, is we look for hooks, things that work for us symbolically, that can be used in a physical way, because the kind of work we do, you need some physical manifestation. I mean, you can't make public art without something. So we're all used to looking and scratching our heads and saying, what's here that we can hang our story on?
My approach is I don't come with any preconceived agenda. None of us do that's in this team, actually. And that's the cohesive thing that brings us together. We have come to this project without a preconceived agenda. And we are delicately trying to learn to dance with each other so that we respect each other's perspective and yet contribute our own sensibilities to it.
We're all interested in history. We all mine history for the work we do. We're all very interested in what history tells us about the present.
All of us do a lot of research relative to our projects. They're deeply tied to the site. They're influenced by contemporary issues that somehow are informed by the past. So the more we learned about the Smith Tower, the more phenomenal that building is, and the more that building is absolutely a reflection not only of Seattle and its growth, but of modern America and the way America has changed since 1914.
When we started doing the research, we all knew that it was the Smith Corona typewriter guy. But we didn't know that his original business was guns. Well, that was very interesting.
The Smith Company made shotguns. If you look at the old Sears catalogs, there's the L.C. Smith shotgun. The tie-in there was that the mechanism, we suspect, of the trigger and hammer translated into the key and the striker that went through the typewriter ribbon and onto the paper. And, you know, it's kind of a lovely twist on From Swords to Plowshares. So we've exploited that. I tried calling the police department to get rifles that they made ineffective and see if I could make some kind of a structure with real rifles, and that didn't come through. So we made these double-barreled shotguns out of broom handles and 2x6s that will support the typewriters. We're all interested in, you know, this notion of the typewriter, the sound of the typewriter coming out of this space. We decided to delineate its silhouette or its profile with shotguns in such a way that the shotguns become a little bit abstracted, but they're still quite obvious, quite frankly. The trigger mechanism and the hammer mechanism is really the typewriter keys and striker mechanism. So it's kind of an homage to what built, you know, the rifles built this structure, but the typewriters pretty much, it was really as a flagship for the typewriter company.
During World War II, the Fed asked Smith to go back to making guns, but then the Army also runs on typewriters. Army needed more typewriters to fill out the form in triplicate, and so they had to go back and make typewriters, so it was back and forth. I mean, that's the peeling of Smith Tower. Smith built the building as a symbol of the future of his company and where they were going in the new world and Donna. Samus did the same thing. So twice, if not three times with Ivor, this building has been taken as a symbol of, you know, future and dreams and exuberance.
We're looking at the floor plates or the floor plans, and the tenants probably take like a snapshot of the same floor three different years, as early as possible, the middle years, like 1960 or 70, and then the most current. And interestingly, that will sort of illustrate right there in front of you the transition of the building.
Originally, it met the needs of the market at that time, which were a bunch of independent entrepreneurs in this, lots of independent office spaces in this building. And as time goes on, it seemed the money and action was in big square floor plates. And that, in the recent history of Smith Tower, is where it's gone. Mm-hmm. And that raises some questions about accessibility.
There were many small businesses there, many one-person operations, many real mom-and-pop kind of outfits. And when the big renovation was done, they were all pushed out of the building with this intention to bring in high-tech companies.
Public art is weird because in a museum or a gallery, people come on purpose to see work. Public art is in your face somewhere. I mean, you're walking down the street and you bump into it and You can ignore it. You can say it's dumb. You could be surprised by it, but you may not have been expecting to run into it. So it seems to me we owe the public at least some help in understanding why this thing is there, since it may not have any logical reason why it's there, except a whole chain of events which the person would have no way of understanding.
The thing about public work that I find really intriguing is this opportunity to do things at a scale that you could never afford to do or even imagine, and that there is this very deep connection to the place in which the work happens. And so my work in every site is more deeply connected, I think, to the site than it is to a preconceived notion that I bring about what my work is, which is why I'm always on this learning curve, because I'm always trying to figure out how to do something. On the objective level, I go to the space, if it exists or if it doesn't, I go to the space where it will be, and I do a lot of library research or internet research. I often talk to people or maybe interview people. And so those are sort of all the objective ways that I do it. But probably the driving unobjective way that I do it is I swim. You spend 40 minutes a day in the pool, your brain goes into another zone, and whatever is the current challenge at hand, whether it's writing something or project or whatever, image, the pool is often my best studio time.
There is no prescription for this. There's no recipe. My work, the form of it, changes all the time because it's not really about me putting my trademark thing in a place. I'm much more interested in the process of getting the thing there and having it come out of the place that kind of caused it to be.
My work started to move into a direction of people on their way to somewhere else coming across it, and that's what happened with the dance steps. So I went after the project on Broadway saying, I know how to look at places. I know how to wait. And had no idea what I was going to do. And watching Broadway and watching that sociology up there and that psychology of that street, I wondered, you know, what if we put dance steps in? So I chalked some out and people would look at them and kind of do them and said, that's the direction to go.
I made my living for about 15 years teaching young children, 4 and 5 year olds. The kids really enjoyed it. I loved it. It was a net gain in energy, and I learned a lot from the kids. Really, what I did really was facilitated them. I didn't teach them anything. Basically, they were exploring the world, and my job was to help make that possible. I mean, I just kind of established some things, moved some things around, suggested some stuff, but it was mostly making it possible for them to do what they needed to do. And that's the very way I run all my projects as a public artist. I really learned it from them. I mean, it worked. I didn't put the ideas in the kid's head, but I helped get him out. So my job as ringleader really is just to keep the ball in the air.
I think that the relationship of the Smith Tower exhibition to my other public work is more in relation to the process than necessarily to the product. The other aspect is that, interestingly, because of the Smith Corona, there is this interface of narrative, not only of narrative story, but the whole idea of narrative from a typewriter. And I think that connection to language is something that's a big part of my work.
The other thing about Broadway is I learned that that public art is really not about the artist. Brodsky is about Brodsky, and God love him for it. We need people, individuals, Henry Moore, out there being Henry Moore in the world. But, you know, when Buster and I put the benches out there, we can go sit on the benches on First Avenue, and we just look like people waiting for the bus. It isn't about us. The dance steps aren't about me. Going through the bus tunnel isn't about me. It's about the experience of being in there. And I think that that's what artists bring to these things, and that's why I want them there.